This is KSTP Radio, heard in King Cove and in Sandpoint and some other outlying areas. I'm Kel Setherington, and this is Meet the People for March 3rd, 2009. My guest this morning is Sarah Howell. Sarah joins us on the phone from Accutan. Sarah and her husband have just moved to Alaska from the lower 48 to work for Eastern Aleutian Tribes. The couple is based in Sandpoint, but doing some traveling, like right now, and it's all for eats. Sarah is an expert in diabetes management and prevention and is working in that capacity for Eastern Aleutian Tribes EATS. Well, good morning to you, Sarah, and thanks for coming on the program this morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on. I'm excited about talking.
So where did you come from in the lower 48?
My husband and I moved out here in January from, we're from South Carolina. We both grew up in Greenville, South Carolina, but we actually moved from Southwest Florida in Naples, where we were both, we had been living there for a year, and moved here from there. So
the temperatures are a bit different in Alaska than in Naples, Florida, but sure,
it's
some cold weather.
In December, we were packing up our things in the late December, and it was almost 80 degrees in Naples. And then when we landed in Anchorage a couple weeks, like a week later, it was negative 15. So huge difference. But we're loving it. We like the cold weather a lot.
At least you're out in the islands or the Bahamas and Alaska, the Aleutian Islands, and actually you live in the Shimigan Islands. Tell me, what is the capacity of your role at Eastern Aleutian Tribes? What do you exactly do on a day-to-day basis?
Well, I am working as a diabetes case manager and educator, which means my role in each community, which we're traveling to all the EAT villages, including King Cove, Cold Bay, Accutan, Adak, False Pass, Nelson Lagoon, and actually Whittier also, is to make sure that anyone with diabetes or prediabetes in each village has lab work that's up to date, and then matching those results up with their treatment to see if any changes need to be made. Also, I'm supposed to be educating these populations about diet and exercise and any other diabetes-related lifestyle changes that need to be made. I think the most important part of what I'm doing is always going to be prevention, especially in children in these communities. So that's day-to-day what I'm doing.
Now, there are different kinds of diabetics out there. Can you explain
right.
the differences between the differences in the different kinds of diabetes?
I can. The type 1 diabetes is it's where someone just intrinsically has a problem with insulin production in their body, and they don't make any insulin, and so they always have to give themselves insulin, and we're also calling that it's insulin-dependent diabetes. And then type 2 is the most common and usually what I'm dealing with in all of these communities. And that is when it's usually related to diet and exercise problems and can be modified with lifestyle changes, sometimes insulin, sometimes medications, but they're non-insulin-dependent. They don't completely have to get insulin from the outside to treat their problem. And that's the most common form. People who have it are more likely to be overweight and sedentary and have a family history of type 2 diabetes. Diabetes itself is a disease process where sugar from the foods we eat, which is everything because everything eventually turns into sugar, stays in the bloodstream instead of going into the muscle and fat cells. But before a person develops type 2 diabetes, they usually have prediabetes, which means that their blood sugar levels are higher than normal but not high enough to be called diabetes. And these are people who are really in dire need of education because at that point they have the ability to stop the disease process by changing and making healthier lifestyle choices, small changes in their diet and physical activity so that they don't become a type 2 diabetic. And people with prediabetes are more likely to develop type 2 diabetes within 10 years and have a heart attack or stroke. And about one-third of Americans with diabetes don't know they have it or prediabetes. So that's a real target group for me because they can really turn the whole thing around and not keep going forward with it and turn into a full-blown diabetic.
Now, is diabetes a problem that's more severe in Alaska than it is in the lower 48?
It is. Alaska Natives are 2.3 times as likely to have diabetes as whites of a similar age. The percentage of Alaska Natives with diabetes has more than doubled since 1990, to where healthcare for Alaska Medicaid patients with diabetes costs at least twice as much per person as it does for patients without diabetes. The costs associated with diabetes in Alaska in the past few years have amounted to more than $360 million a year. It's epidemic in Alaska Native communities, some of which can be attributed to the major changes that have been introduced in these communities in the past few decades. For instance, their diet that used to consist of fresh fish and lean meats that they hunted, now they're eating processed, you know, shelf-stable foods that can be found in bush grocery stores, you know, especially out here and even in places like Anchorage and bigger cities. And then also activity-level changes, where they used to haul water and chop wood. Now they have plumbing in their homes and electricity. I've found that in some of these small bush villages, you can be in a village with six or seven type 2 diabetics who are giving themselves insulin or taking medications, but 80% of the people in the village are pre-diabetic, so at risk for heart disease, stroke, kidney disease, blindness, nerve damage, and a million other health problems.
If you're just joining us here on 8:30 a.m. KSDP in Sandpoint, I'm Kels Hetherington, and this is Meet the People. I'm talking with Sarah Howell. She's a diabetes expert who is with Eastern Aleutian Tribes. She joins us on the phone this morning from Accutan, but she's actually based in Sandpoint. She does some traveling like she is right now for Eastern Aleutian Tribes. We're talking diabetes. Sarah, is diabetes curable?
As far as curable is an interesting word. It's definitely preventable. And then once you're diagnosed with diabetes, the type 2 diabetes, which develops from, you know, continually not changing your lifestyle, you know, diet and exercise, then you can definitely reverse it and move back to a pre-diabetic stage or even, it is. So curable is a good word. I always think of curable as going along with a different type of disease process. But it is something that can greatly, the risks of it and all of the comorbidities that go along with it can be decreased by changing some lifestyle habits.
Now, also, one thing that you're doing involves prevention work in making the community aware. So it's community awareness. It's part of your job. And you're trying to put together the Aleutian Olympics that will take place in April, if I'm correct. Can you tell us a bit about what you want to see accomplished with the Aleutian Olympics?
Yes, absolutely. Well, first of all, as far as diabetes in children, and even we talked about how in Alaska Natives it's 2.3 times as likely for diabetes to develop in that population. And in the children, it's has a really high prevalence also, even just in Alaska Native children. And then in children in general these days, the prevalence of overweight children in the United States has nearly tripled in the past 20 years. In the 90s, the total number of young American Indians and Alaska Natives with diagnosed diabetes increased by 71%. So, you know, not to mention the association in children between being overweight and having poor self-esteem and depression, the condition of being overweight is really closely linked to type 2 diabetes. So it's considered a major public health problem among young American Indians and Alaska Natives right now. Overweightness in children is usually caused by a lack of physical activity and unhealthy eating patterns, which can probably be attributed to today's sedentary society with so much TV and video games are huge contributors to inactivity. The Surgeon General has a report that with a statistic that 43% of adolescents watch more than 2 hours of TV a day, and it's recommended that adults spend 30 minutes of time a day in moderate physical activity, and for children it's 60 minutes a day, and they're watching more than 2 hours of TV.
Well,
so
they should only be listening to the radio. That's the first rule of thumb, right?
Then you get right, out there. Right.
But going back to the Aleutian Olympics, Sarah, how is this going to lessen or make the community aware of diabetes in the Aleutian Islands and the Shumigans?
So something we're doing in Sandpoint is these Aleutian Olympics. Mostly, it's going to be, it's kind of considered, it's a hybrid between a field day and a health fair, and it's all done with a local flair. It's to raise awareness about diabetes and health and contribute to prevention efforts. We are calling it the Aleutian Olympics, the Spring Games 2009 at Sandpoint School, which will kind of be a pilot for hopefully in the future getting to do it in some of the other communities. In thinking of a way to get into the schools in these villages and actually make an impression with kids, I really feel like it requires more than a 30-minute assembly where they pull the kids together and make them sit there while I talk to them about what they should and shouldn't be doing. I'm big on earning the right to be heard with people, especially before going in there and trying to teach them something, because why should they care what I have to say otherwise? So anyway, I think with kids, the way to earn that right is to have fun with them. So this is just going to be a really fun day of, like I said, a hybrid field day health fair done with a local flair, where it's going to, as far as the events go in the games, it's going to involve K through 6. There'll be a kiddie version of the games for K and first graders, and then grades 2 through 6 will be divided into teams, or what we're calling tribes, with names like the king crabs, the sea lions, the bison, and the ptarmigan. And the tribes will compete against each other in several events, mostly relays, that are designed to promote cultural awareness and healthy active living and teamwork or tribe work in the lives of students. The awards will be really small. The goal is just to stay active and work together and have fun doing it. The games are all Aleutian-centric. I've kind of made them up out of other relays and stuff that I played as a kid or learned when I was at camp as a kid, like Kayak a Kid and the Harpoon Hurl and Grundon's Clam Dig and Driftwood Dizzy Derby, the Buoy Stomp Past the Cod and Extra Tough Bigfoot Boot Relay. And like I said, we'll have kiddie versions of those for K through first graders.
Oh, very good names. I like that. Yeah, I like the... It's just fantastic. And the station is going to play a role in that. We're going to lend some equipment to you guys for the event, and I'm also going to help you in any way I possibly can.
Right, which I appreciate so much.
And we're looking for other people to assist with this event as well. Other partners, businesses, or individuals in the community, how can they help make this project a success?
Well, the main thing I really need at this point is adults to volunteer to help with the games. There's really, you know, it's 10 to 15 events that there's going to be that the day of, and I need one or two volunteers to help run each game, hoping to use some of the high school students. I'm working with Heather and Luke Meinert with that student council sponsor. And I already have some parent volunteers, but I'm looking for more, and they don't have to be parents, just anyone in the community who's interested in helping out with stuff. And then I have spoken with several of the local businesses about helping out with maybe some prizes. We don't want anything heavy duty as far as prizes go, because it's really just supposed to be for fun and not too competitive. But we are looking for help with being able to have some food there. We want to do a couple hours of games in the morning and then break for lunch and then an awards ceremony. And it would be neat to have some fun awards, you know, otherwise we will think of something, but I could definitely have help with, you know, anything, gift certificates to something, or I've also written to some businesses outside as far as in Anchorage and stuff, and some of them have showed some interest, so that's exciting about getting us some fun gift cards that kids could go online and shop for something to help keep them active. And then Ginny Perkins, the principal at the school, is super supportive of all of this. And we've talked about in the future using it as a preliminary to get more kids going to the Native Youth Olympics in Anchorage, which we've missed the deadline for this year, but it's a good practice year to see how it goes and see if we can use it in other communities, and then maybe in the future we can do that. Also, throughout the day, I didn't tell you this, there's going to be various stations set up with health information about diabetes and diet and exercise and tobacco cessation, and some of them will be manned by healthcare workers, and some of them might just be there, but just with some information and fun things to look at about those things, just to help educate some people in the community about that.
So, Sarah, as we think about diabetes, particularly the second type that you discussed, the type that evolves from people who eat too many sugary foods, too many fatty foods, what does it do? How does it impair someone's day-to-day lifestyle? I understand that in the end, a person who suffers from a diabetes condition may eventually have a heart attack or a stroke. Before that takes place, if it does, how might you feel the impacts of diabetes?
Well, you're not going to be able to do a whole lot of the things that you should be able to do in your life just because of impairs everything. It slowly just slows down your whole system, and people can, you know, lose their, like you said, the really end things or something like a heart attack or a stroke, but it can affect your vision, and it can affect your peripheral vascular system and your nervous system, so the feeling in your hands and your feet. kids who have it, it's already diagnosed with diabetes at a young age, have a really, really poor outcomes because the longer you have it, the worse it gets. That's why the key, especially once someone has it, is really tight control of your blood sugars, either by medication or diet and exercise, so that you don't have those in things. In the past, for the past 4 years, I've been working as an emergency department nurse. In an ER, and I, you know, as far as my experience with diabetes, I was worried mostly about mixing and titrating insulin drips or, you know, taking care of patients that are in diabetic emergencies, and I've definitely seen the other end of all of this. That is just not a pretty picture, and getting there's a whole lot of stuff in between, you know, the beginning diagnosis or pre-diabetes and getting to that point, but it's been really interesting and really enjoyable and rewarding to get to be a part of this end of it, which is really the beginning where you can stop the stuff and get it to where it doesn't get to that point. So,
if you're a parent and you're listening to this in Sandpoint or King Cove, wherever KSDP is heard, or even if you're listening on the web, how can, and you have children and you're concerned that they may have diabetes, what are the telltale signs that you need to be looking for?
In the beginning, early stuff can be fatigue, feeling more tired than you should be after doing things or after not even doing any things. And then there's frequently needing to use the bathroom, being thirsty a lot or hungry a lot, just out of the norm. Those are things to look for. But no matter what, if anyone is overweight or obese, they should be checked for it. And then people over the age of 45 should always be checked for it every year. And, you know, if you're at that beginning part or you're not overweight or obese and you're just not sure things to do, are the National Diabetes Education Program puts out a list of 10 really important things you can do, changes you can make in your life. You can look it up online. It's their 10 goals, the National Diabetes Education Program. But it's goals like losing 5 to 7% of your current weight, which is just like 10 to 14 pounds for a 200-pound person, and teaming up with family to help support you with diet and exercise, making healthy food choices, taking the time to prepare healthy foods, which I know can be hard in the bush villages where by the time the produce gets here, it's not too savory and it's really expensive, but it's definitely worth it.
Without going into individual brand names, what are the worst foods that a person can eat and the best foods to cut out of your diet if you want to avoid having diabetes?
Okay, so let's see. The worst foods that you can eat are definitely starchy foods that they spike your blood sugar. As soon as you eat them, your blood sugar just shoots up because they're really easy to digest and it doesn't take any time for your body to digest them, and then just bingo, your blood sugar goes up. That's like rice and potatoes. They have a rule of things that are white are starchy and are things that turn to sugar really quickly. And then, of course, sugary things, sweets and all of that stuff. But people often think that's all it is the sugary or candy or things like that, and it's not. Everything eventually turns to sugar. Oil and butter, cooking with oil and butter, you know, instead you can stir fry or broil or bake with nonstick spray using low-fat things. Beans are really good with lots of protein in the bush. That's a really good thing when it's harder to get vegetables and things to make sure you're getting the high-fiber foods that that take longer to digest and don't spike your sugar every time you eat them to where your body gets so used to that spike that it just used to living that way and it becomes diabetes. Yeah, definitely. And anything processed, anything that can sit on a shelf for a year and a half before going bad, those are bad things to eat. Things that are good are, fruits and vegetables, you know, red, orange, yellow, green vegetables, calcium-rich foods are really good. And then the worst things, obviously, are the sweets and then the processed things that have a lot of, you know, partially hydrogenated stuff in them and corn syrup and all of that.
Let me ask you this. Some people will say, yes, I eat some of the things, Sarah, that you've mentioned, but I also am working outside all day. So I don't have to be careful about what I eat. Is there any truth to that?
There's a little bit of truth to it. As far as the word moderation is just key there, you know, that you can eat some things. And I even tell diabetics I'm taking care of, you can have a brownie every once in a while. I mean, you know, nobody's going to totally restrict themselves, and if they do, it's not going to work, you know, even if they do. So moderation is always key, and in someone who's just at risk or just wanting to watch out for being at risk, definitely they can eat more things like that and get away with it if they're exercising a lot. But it's a matter of what goes in and what comes out as far as calories and what they're taking in, and being moderate about what they eat, and then getting lots of exercise. So there's some truth to that. I wouldn't go too far, because most people don't genetically just have that great metabolism where they can do whatever they want. And even the people who think they do usually don't. So not much truth to it, but a little bit is as far as in moderation.
Well, Sarah, thanks for joining us this morning on Meet the People on 8:30 a.m. KSDP. Heard in Sandpoint and in King Cove. This broadcast will also be available online at www.apradio.org. That's the station's website, and you'll be able to find this as a replay segment. So we'll see you back here in Sandpoint in a few weeks, Sarah.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me on. Good to talk.
All right. Thanks. That was Sarah Howell of the Eastern Aleutians Tribes. They run the clinic here in Sandpoint, as well as elsewhere in the Aleutian Islands and the Shimigan Islands here. So it was good to talk to her. She specializes in diabetes prevention and treatment. And we're going to see her back in Sandpoint in the near future. She's right now in Accutan. That is Meet the People for today. Look for more Meet the Peoples to come online at www.apradio.org. I'm Kels Hetherington.